Welcome to the Experience Quest, a talk show focused on exploring tabletop role-playing games and reflecting on our shared experiences. I'm Sarah, a host errant, and today we're going on a quest. Welcome to the first episode of the Experience Quest. This podcast was formerly known as Critical Catastrophe, so if you are new here or a longtime listener that is wondering where Critical Catastrophe went, this is it. This is still the same podcast. It just has a new name and a new cover art, all that good stuff. That idea of something new is kind of what this episode is going to be about in terms of tabletop role-playing games, and in my case, Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition in particular. As a dungeon master, I find myself drawn to something new, often. I've been running the same campaign for, I think, almost 3 years now. I started 5th Edition not as a player, but as a DM of this campaign called Magic Awry. Been playing with the same players and the same characters for, the duration of those 3 years. And I often crave something new, something different. I want to keep DMing, keeping a dungeon master, keep playing with these people. But I often find myself a bit like stagnated, playing the same campaign. And having it started 3 years ago with me being a complete newbie DM and still learning 5th edition, it has a legacy of of poorly structured campaign. It's just been pieced together over 3 years with not always a very clear vision. Sometimes I find myself a little worn out or tired by Magic Awry and just crave something new. But they're level 18, and this is the furthest any of us have gotten in a campaign over the handful of years that we played D&D and Pathfinder off and on. Level 18 is a big deal. I think it's not very often that you get to that high-level play. And as a dungeon master, I kind of hate the high-level play. There's not as much variety of creatures to throw at your players in high-level play. At least it feels that way. But a lot of the creative, interesting creatures and monsters in 5th edition are at lower levels of play. It feels that way to me, at least. For the most part, I am more enamored with that low-level play between, levels like 1 and 12. Like, that feels solid. There's a lot of great variety and content there without having to homebrew. And it's deadlier, too. You know, you get these huge monsters at high-level play that, yes, they're terrifying and they're deadly. But if you have a party that has some variety, a well-balanced party, it's hard to strike fear into them. It's hard for me to strike fear into them. I don't actually want to kill any of the party members. I don't want to kill any of the characters off. But I want there to be a challenge. If there's no challenge, the combat and those encounters are just kind of flat. It's just kind of an obstacle in their path. That and because of how the campaign moved along, they're right now positioned in such a way that throwing all of these epic monsters at them doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. They're not journeying across the plains or venturing into the Nine Hells or even, chasing down dragons. They're just in Waterdeep doing contests at level 18. What have I done? How did I get here? I know how I got here because I wasn't thinking about the structure of a campaign from level 1 to 20. I was thinking about a short campaign from level 1 to accomplish that one goal that I set at, during the first year of the campaign, and we blew past that and kept playing, and I'm like, oh no. I never quite got the campaign structure worked out. So now we're doing things at level 16, 17, 18 that probably should have been done at like level 3. Contests, festivals, all that good stuff in Waterdeep. Waterdeep is really cool. But I think it's time for something new for both of them and me as a dungeon master. But I don't feel like I can quit this campaign. I don't feel like I can just say, hey guys, hard stop. I don't really feel like continuing, so yeah, let's do a new campaign. Because we're level 18, we are so close to the end. I just keep putting things in my own way getting to the end. So I'm gonna, you know, try and wrap it up gracefully. I want to get to the end of this. I want them to reach level 20. I want them to defeat Ralvius/Ruin. He has all the R names. It's not so much that Ruin, his true name, it's not so much that Ruin would actually use just R names, so much as the DM trying to have a clear, understandable hint for the players to pick up on. In any case, I want them to get to level 20, kick Ruin's ass, save the world, do all the high-level play things, and then bring it to a close. And I think after the campaign is closed, it's a great playground, perhaps, for one-shots. I have no interest in continuing a campaign at level 20, but to have this world with high-level characters that you can travel in and out of, doing one-shots as level 20 characters, doing incredible things, things they really should be doing, but aren't yet, because. So how do I reconcile that want and need to do something new and different, something else, while still making Magic Rye happen, while still showing up and playing? Well, variety is the spice of life. And my friend Kyle, after he listened to the Critical Catastrophe Season 0 finale, he messaged me and he said, "You're not non-committal. You just like a variety of experiences." And that is so true. And like all aspects of my life, I enjoy a variety. Variety is the spice of life. That's just how I operate. I also like the idea of not being non-committal. So I'll go with that. A variety of experiences. For me, I have been balancing my want for something new with one-shots and trying other systems, in addition to playing in my partner's campaign. This combination of things is keeping me from getting too burned out on my main campaign, Magic Rye, which, to be clear, I love. I mean, I really do love that we've gotten this far in a campaign, and I do love playing and being a DM. But these little one-shots and trying things like the tabletop game called Quest, or getting to play in Edge of the Empire that my friend Kevin, he ran basically a one-shot of it from the starter kit. That has really reinvigorated me as a DM for Magic Rye. There was one day that I just so dreaded DMing the campaign that I had that I just asked my players, or told them, I guess, I just kind of sprang it on them, to do a one-shot. It ended up going on for two sessions, and we just kind of made it up as we went. I had no thoughts going into it. We just sat down, and they made characters rather hastily, and I planned very quickly a few key points for this one shot. And just having those two sessions off from Magic Rye and getting to experience these new characters that they came up with, and having a completely different setting with some different goals, was really invigorating and liberating. They got to travel through a swamp with a little kobold guide. I've already forgotten his name. He was a fun little dude. And help a village who was being harassed by a black dragon and lizard folk. They went to the dragon's lair. The alternative was to have the dragon come to them at the village, or whatever else they could come up with. But they chose to go to the dragon's lair, and they fought her there. And one of the players, their character died, a dragonborn sorcerer? Well, anyway, one of the characters unfortunately died to a giant snake that was hanging out in the dragon's swamp lair. But ultimately, they defeated this dragon, and it was just a fun diversion. They had two sessions to explore, have a couple little encounters, cross this rickety old bridge, get to the swamp. The swamp lair of the dragon, and they ultimately won. It was a bit of a rough battle. I actually felt like I could threaten them, like strike some fear into them, up until the point, at least, where the druid, this halfling druid, turned into a giant snake and managed to constrict and grapple the dragon out of the air. I think she was either flying on a giant eagle or was a giant eagle, and then dropped down and grapple landed on the dragon, succeeded on the grapple, pulled her out of the air, and they just plummeted to the swamp. And that's how the dragon died, just grappled by a giant snake. I think it even escaped once and then got grappled again. Oh, grappling. Still didn't stop the dragonborn from dying. It was a fun diversion. I enjoyed that. I really enjoyed getting to experience these new characters, even if they were short-lived. It was a fresh experience, it was a change of pace, and that is something I need every so often. And even though everyone created their characters kind of independently, they didn't really talk much about what they were creating as it was happening, 3 out of the 4 players were reptilian-ish to some extent. We had a Yuan-Ti woman who was just kind of interested in making a snack out of everyone. Probably kind of evil, but, you know, played along, went along with the quest, wasn't a problem. Then we had a lizard folk, which is funny because they had no idea that they would be encountering other lizard folk. So a little lizard folk man who had a huge, huge crush on the Yuan-Ti woman. That was really, really funny having them roleplay that out. Yeah, Rizda, the lizard folk, was he was crushing real hard, and she was not having it. But what's funny is the Yuan-Ti player, that's Amy from previous episodes. Amy headcanon is thinking that maybe they did get together later on and have these little Yuan-Ti and lizard folk babies running around. A real sweet image. And then we had Solprax. That was his name. We had the Dragonborn Solprax, followed by Keithri. Yeah, Keithri, the halfling druid who definitely stuck out like a sore thumb in this party. Everyone was kind of stern and slightly evil, but this little halfling druid was just a sweetheart, and she would sometimes forget that she was shapeshifted into her wild shape and just go around as that creature. And the quote, the big takeaway, the inside joke from that series of that two-shot, if you will, is a quote from Keithri. Mama used to say, or Mama would always say, and she would just have these ridiculous anecdotes or whatever from her mom. And it was just the most hilarious thing. Everyone started quoting it because she was super chipper and lighthearted, optimistic, compared to the rest of the party. So whenever she would go off to say, like, well, my mom used to always say, and the party would just facepalm. I recently got to play in a one-shot. That was a lot of fun. And Fran, Kroga D&D on Twitter, she ran it with a couple coworkers and myself. It was well put together. It was structurally sound. It made a lot of sense. It had all of the components and story beats you would want from a two-session little mini one-shot, two-shot. I don't know what to call these things anymore. They're not one-shots. And I got to play as a character named Quest. I don't know what it is with me and the word Quest. But yeah, a half-orc named Quest who would wear a plainly carved wooden mask, and she was a monk, a Way of the Four Elements, which, oh my goodness, let me tell you something about Way of the Four Elements. I knew it was going to be a little bit key hungry, but oh my goodness, Way of the Four Elements just eats through your key like crazy. Fortunately, the DM, Fran, was kind enough to give us enough short rests that it wasn't too bad, but I would blow through that key so quickly. And sometimes to, like, poor effect, that class might need some work. In any case, that was a lot of fun. The other two players were super new. They had kind of, sort of, maybe played D&D a little bit in some form. Nothing quite as structured as the way we play. And one of them was really getting into it. He was having a blast. The other one was, he was having fun too, of course. But Jonathan just, like, he was really getting into it in a really satisfying way. And it was fun to just kind of sit back and and play and see that experience of playing for the first time unfolding. But I liked Twist, and I liked that one shot that we played, and it was, again, it was refreshing. It was refreshing for me as a dungeon master to just get to play a character that's new to me and have a fun little backstory that's not too serious. You know, Quest just wanted to explore the world and experience all of these different cultures, and that's probably where her mask came from. And she spent some time with some culture who believed in, you know, what's on the inside is more important than the outside, and they would cover their faces. You know, it's not that she can't take her mask off, and she probably does. It's not like she's going to be exiled like the Mandalorian or however that works for taking your mask off. But to her, as a monk who valued action over material things, over wealth, over appearances, the mask just kind of worked. It was not exactly optimal to have a half-orc monk. This was before we had the rules for Tasha's Cauldron of Everything to just reassign your stat points however you want, which would have worked out a little bit better. But I like the idea of this kind of slightly lumbering, heavy half-orc with like these really deliberate, heavy punches, right? Like just very focused, hefty blows, like everything super deliberate. And that's how I imagined Quest. She wasn't super speedy. She was just more of like an earthbender style of fighting, very hefty, again with my vocabulary. But that was a fun one shot. We were up in the north. It was snowy. It was very snowy. There was this blizzard going on, and the winter was just getting colder and colder every year, more severe, and this village needed help resolving whatever curse was upon their land that kept this winter so harsh. We went with the NPC guide, the Silver Song lady, and we discovered the truth of her family's past, and we went to her shrine and we helped guide her through it. But yeah, it had all the main components of a good D&D mini campaign. It had the social encounters, it had some surprise encounters, it had kind of some puzzles and just like the environment. And it had some really good roles for survival and fun NPCs. It had a dungeon, and it had a big boss to fight at the end. So all of the things you would want to experience as a beginner to the game, it had a great variety. Quest got to buy this little charm that was supposed to protect her, and she bought one for the NPC to protect her as well. I don't think they did anything. I think she might have gotten swindled, but she was fine with that. Ultimately, I've been making sure to play in one-shots, to run one-shots, to try Quest, try Edge of the Empire, and I hope to expand that further and get to play more variety of games and learn more systems. Maybe try Pathfinder 2 or Starfinder or some more Edge of the Empire. I really like that system that Edge of the Empire has, so much so that it's kind of inspired some of my own ideas. I've been doing all of that, but the main event to me in recent history happened just a week or so ago, depending on when this episode comes out. It was a week before Thanksgiving. A couple friends came to visit. I realized since they were going to be here for a week that we could play some D&D. It'd be one DM, three players, and we could just do whatever. So toward the end of the week, around Thursday, we started playing. I had a couple days before that to actually sit down and kind of prep some ideas I was going to DM for them. And I realized I can do whatever I want. Like, I normally play it kind of safe. But I wanted to try something different, something new, something to kind of challenge me as a dungeon master. And what I went with was a Feywild adventure, which 5th edition doesn't have a ton of available information on the other planes. There's a little blurb about the Feywild in, I think, the Dungeon Master's Guide, the DMG. And it has like some boxed text about the Seely Fey and the Unseely Fey, and it's not terribly well fleshed out. There's some like little quirks of the Feywild, but I took what I could from that. I looked at a 4th edition book I think it's called Heroes of the Feywild or something like that. I looked at that and I did some general reading about the Fey as just general lore that D&D might have based it off of, with the Seelie and Unseelie Courts. Enunciating the Seelie and Unseelie Courts. And from there, I came up with a beginning and an end, and I knew I needed something in the middle, so that just kind of formed as we went. The beginning was simply that an elf on the material plane named Keldrim, he had this wild tree, spelt with a Y, of course, in his home, his community, that had been there for, I don't know, centuries, and it was dying because it had been taken from the Feywild and given to his family as a gift, and it had finally run out of its Feywild magic while on the material plane, and now it's dying. So he's requested that a party of adventurers go into the Feywild and get him some kind of magical artifact called the Diametric Orb, or at least that's what he calls it, and bring it to him so that he can restore life to the wild tree in his elven community. He opens a portal for the adventurers, and turns out he already hired one adventuring party that failed. One person had been left behind in the Feywild, the other three had made it out, and couldn't really remember much of what happened, or even their missing companion, Jasper Jamjar. But Keldrim remembered Jasper, and that there was four of them. But they were unsuccessful, they did not get the Diametric Orb. And so the players come in with their party, and they're going to give it a go. They're hired to go in there and see if they can do it before the portal closes in 10 days' time. They are guided by a half-orc named Kipper. Kipper Quickfoot, I think. I had a lot of foots in my campaign somehow. There was a Merryfoot and a Quickfoot and a Skiphoof. Oh, names. So they were guided by a half-orc named Kipper Quickfoot, and he's a half-orc, I think I just said that like three times, who was raised in a commune of halflings and gnomes, and he grew up kind of vegetarian, very pacifist, and one with nature. He's a scout. That was a stat block, the scout. And so they begin their journey just a couple hours into the Feywild. They have a handy haversack full of rations, and they have this big old hourglass that is ticking down the time in the material plane. Because in the Feywild, it's always kind of like dusk or twilight. You can't really tell easily what time it is, and the passage of time in the Feywild can be quirky. It's a little different. So they were provided with this hourglass to help them keep track of their 10 days, so they knew when they needed to GTFO before it was too late. I didn't want to force them to have this NPC with them all the time, so one of the very first things that happens as they're walking along in the Feywild is these vines shoot out from the trees, and they grab hold of Kipper, and they pull him back into the woods, just whoosh, way back, and he drops this map that he had been mumbling to over as he was trying to guide them through the Feywild. So it was up to the party at that point if they actually wanted to save Kipper from whatever had pulled him into the woods. You know, the vines wrapped around him and he shouted, "Oh, not again," and got pulled away. I randomly chose another character to target, one of the actual player characters, had them make a save for the vines, and they succeeded handily. So at this point, they had the map, they picked it up, and it turned out to be this talking sentient map that was very dignified and kind of deadpan. And it would reveal things on the map to them if it asked in the right way, if they asked it in the right way. And it was just kind of a way for them to draw on this piece of paper what they were experiencing and where they were going and what their destination was in an interactive medium. They did decide to save Kipper. They went into the woods and found this revel where Kipper was tangled up in vines and being like force-fed some weird fey alcohol, and they had to do some like silly little games to appease the satyrs and the pixies there. So that was their first foray while in the Feywild. And they chose to untangle Kipper and bring him back with them. So I felt like that was their way of getting to decide, do we leave this NPC with the satyrs having a great party, or do we take him with us and have him be part of the party? Part of the... Ooh. Party is a... It's got a couple of meanings there. Ultimately, they chose to bring him along with them. However, they kept the map, and were now master of the map. I built this adventure as they went. We played over the course of 3 days, just a few hours on the evening of Thursday and Friday, and then a whole lot on Saturday. And there still wasn't quite enough time to really get the climax of the Feywild adventure quite like I would have hoped, but it was still pretty interesting. My favorite part of the whole thing isn't anything that I came up with. It was fun, sure. I had some ideas, and I got to put some Feywild monsters in front of them and some goofy social encounters, and it was fun getting to come up with that and pick out maps and music, but what I loved most are the characters that these three players brought to the table. Now, I play with Fran and Amy all the time. They're in Magic Arai. But Amy's husband, Kyle, he doesn't actually play regularly with us. He'll join in for occasional one-shots, or he'll run his own. But he has other interests that take up his time, and he doesn't want to dedicate all that to playing D&D. So it was a lot of fun getting to see his character, since I don't get to play with him as often. And the other characters that were brought to the table just warm my heart as a dungeon master. It's like everything I could hope for in a party and more. And it made playing so much fun. Even though I wasn't playing a character, I felt super engaged outside of my own DM prep and plans. I was just having so much fun seeing what they were doing, the way they were talking, the way they were interacting. And it's because they made characters that had backgrounds that made sense, that they could pull from, that shaped their personalities, and they had goals to some extent, that made everything they do meaningful and impactful and interesting, whether it was related to their quest or not. My partner, Fran, she played this cranky old bugbear warrior. Her name was Kruos, and of course she had the long-limbed bugbear with the long-reach weapons, the like halberd and glaive. I think it was a glaive she used. And her backstory was kind of tragic. She had been forced to fight the wars for other people, and over time really just hated being made to fight and hated people who stirred up trouble and wanted to go to war, and she hated senseless violence. She just wanted, in her old age, to relax and have a simple life. While she was conscripted to an army that she didn't want to fight for, she met some Firbolgs while trying to destroy their forest and their fortress. And they recruited her to their side, and she got comfortable and became friends with them, lived in their community, and kind of became like an honorary member of the Firbolg people there. Until, of course, this is all part of her backstory, their community was eventually wiped out, their forest destroyed, and she saved a pinecone from it and has been carrying it with her since. So this is just the backstory to help shape her character. It was a pretty short, maybe like a page. I say that's pretty short. That might be long for some people. But it was brief. And this backstory just helped drive her character. And it informed the things that this character said and did. And she would have some of the crankiest zingers of this like three-part campaign. It was so great. Some of the things she would say, I wish I had a better memory, but they were hilarious. Just calling people out for stirring up shit and kind of sassing back to the fey matriarch that they met. And poor Kipper. Oh, poor Kipper. She would just give Kipper so much trouble. He was afraid that she would, like, purposefully push him off a cliff or something, but she actually did care. Kruvos, the bugbear, cared about Kipper and her party members, and she would strike at, you know, anyone hostile who came close to the party, you know, slice them down at the ankles and prevent them from hurting her friends that she begrudgingly traveled with on this Feywild adventure. Meanwhile, in, like, direct contrast to this angry old bugbear, we have Valorin, the Princess of the Glimmering Depths. She is a Triton. Grew up in an orphanage with some friends and was adopted by a family who brought her into their life along with some of her sibling friends from the orphanage and took care of her and raised her as their own. You know, because she wasn't actually part of their royal family, she really held on to these titles and built them up for herself to make herself seem like she really did belong and own that royalty. So she would call herself the Princess of the Glimmering Depths, which was just some, like, ravine in the ocean that I don't think anyone really cared about. But her people would fight sea monsters, and she didn't really fight any of those herself, but it was just a part of being in the ocean where they were, that, you know, there were great battles that happened. And her biggest goal of this entire campaign was to get as many titles for herself as possible. I realized that Amy was trying to rival Prince Philip, like the real-life person Prince Philip. He has this extremely, extremely long list of titles to his name. Like, his full title is, was it like 130 words? It was ridiculous. And so Amy, for Valorin, her Triton character, she wanted her to have, like, as many titles as he does in reality. And that was super fun. She was not quite a bubbly character, but very, very open, very interested in the world, because she doesn't always come onto land, and she's never been to the Feywild. She hasn't even been to a proper forest before. Mostly stays around, like, the port towns. But, yeah, so she's just, like, drinking up this Feywild. She's interacting with everyone in, like, a really curious and intrigued way. And has almost a little bit of, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the early Captain America, where he doesn't quite understand all of the wordplay and the references. She has a little bit of that going on. And kind of had an accent similar to Jester from Critical Role. Although Amy has never watched any Critical Role, so it was very much her own thing, but it's what it made me think of. Her kind disposition and good-natured approach to things, a little bit of cunning and sass, just made that so much fun to watch the dynamic between her and Kruvos and Kyle's character, Ra Demisk. Kyle, as he was making his character, learned that the Leonin exist. The Leonin from Mythic Odyssey of Theros, and had kind of a Khajiit idea in mind, where he wanted to be a merchant that has wares to sell, and so he's going throughout the Feywild trying to talk up and sell his wares and accumulate interesting treasures as well. So Ra Demisk is this Leonin merchant who has traveled the world and been to unique locations on the material plane, collecting wares and stories, and the way he interacted with the world was very much like he always had a story to tell while interacting with other people and things, and he would hearken back to those stories and have some kind of takeaway from it, just some really silly things too. And so when he was making his character, I had him roll on the trinkets table. I just had him roll some D100s, and I wrote down what he got off the trinkets table. And I said, okay, here's your like four or five wares in addition to whatever adventuring gear you want to pick up with your starting money. I think they had like 200 gold each in addition to starting gear. And they were level 6, for clarification. It was a level 6 one shot. And so he had some silly trinkets out of that, like a dragon's talon. That's kind of cool. A piece of a banner from something, Like the two toy soldiers where one's missing its head, like a little snuff box or something like that. I forget what the other one was, but it was like nothing spectacular. He rolled kind of results off of that trinket table. But I was fine with that. I sent him the things that he got from it, and he ran with it. It was great. When he finally got to show off his wares to the Fae matriarch. Oh, what was her name? Lily Merryfoot. There we go. You know, they met this spring Eladrin, Lily Merryfoot, who was matriarch over that corner of the Feywild they were in. And so he's trying to show her his wares and stuff because she wants something precious to them, a memory or an item that is very meaningful. And at that point, Kuros was actually about to take out her pine cone, but hadn't quite fully revealed it. So I was kind of curious what was in her pocket that she was going to give away. But Ra steps in with his wares, and he deceptively talks each of them up as being very important to him and very valuable. And all of them are pasta-themed in some way. There was King Ravioli and Queen Ziti and just like all of these pasta terms that are being used completely seriously. And we just lost it. In Valorin, Amy's character, oh my gosh, Valorin sees the banner, the very first item that he reveals, the banner from King Ravioli's Last Stand or something like that. And she just latches onto it like her father fought in that war and it's so meaningful to her. He came back alive but changed or something. I mean, she was like hardcore acting. Like Valorin was sad and touched by it and claimed that it was so precious to her. I mean, they really played up that it was a meaningful, precious object and rolled some deception checks. And yeah, Lily Merryfoot was pleased. You know, she asked, like, you would like to have this? You would like to have this banner? And Valorin, not actually serious, but deceptively enough, was like, oh yes, I would love it very much. It means so much to me. And so Lily, being a little fae monstrosity that doesn't really care about mortal things, takes the banner for herself and hangs it on her wall in her fancy manner. And I was just blown away with these three characters. They were like the life of the session, the life of the game. It made playing so much fun and so like there's so much depth there. I'm kind of at a loss for words of how, of just how proud I am of the table that I had. It almost didn't matter what I did because they were just having so much fun with this dynamic. And oh my goodness, they adopted like three NPCs. So one of Ra's little side quests was to sell these three seashells, which is not a Demolition Man reference, and sell them for these shards, which are like pieces of bones encased in like Feywild crystal or something. He was supposed to sell those to some unseelie Fey, and they meet this goblin while they're out resting in their tiny hut, and this goblin's just coming by to say hi because why not? His name was Iggy Nib, which was a reference to Fran's campaign where we adopted two goblins called Ig and Nib. Two different goblins, two different names. So I just threw Iggy Nib in there. And Ra, Kyle's character, managed to sell one of the shells for, I think, 6 shards. Kind of swindled this little goblin out of all of his money. And I don't know what happened. I had no plans for this goblin being anything more than just a passerby to potentially buy stuff from Kyle's character. Like, that was the full purpose of this goblin. And Kuros asked, how old are you? Where are your parents? Silly me. I'm like, oh, he's maybe in his 20s, like in human years, and his parents are dead. And she's just like, why are you trapped in the Feywild? And poor Iggy Nib's just like, I grew up here. What do you mean? I live here. I guess that was the cue for everyone to be like, oh, poor goblin, and Valorin wants to be its mom, and then there's Granny Kuros, the cranky bugbear that is, like, really protective of this little goblin boy now. I don't know what happened, but he continued the journey with them up this mountain, and I guess now lives happily with Kuros and visits Mama Valorin in the ocean. I don't know anymore. So they have Kipper and Iggy Nib at this point. Kipper, who must have, like, a confidence issue at this point, because they put more stock in this little goblin than they do Kipper. But they eventually make it up the mountain, which is like this floating chunk of mountaintop surrounded by a base of, like, floating shards of mountain. It's hard to describe, I found, both now and in-game. I used some pictures that definitely helped. But anyway, the big takeaway is that it's floating, and that I had to climb floating chunks to get up to it. Fortunately, they had some flying magic items, and a flying broom that they got from a hag's house, where Lily Merryfoot had told them to retrieve a trinket. And when they got there, they used the sending stone to ask her for the specifics. It turned out to be a pie in the oven. So they had to steal a pie from a hag's house, and along the way grabbed the hag's broom. It was just a silly little side quest to just show how flippant the Fae are, that they would send a mortal party to go fetch a pie at the cost of their lives. But anyway, they climb up this mountain, and by this point it's, you know, toward the end of the adventure, and Kipper has revealed that the only reason he's there trying to guide them through the Feywild is because he loves Jasper Jamjar and failed to show up in time to participate in the first adventure to the Feywild, and he's trying to find his friend Jasper, who is actually from the same halfling gnome commune as him. Now, I think it's pretty clear that Jasper did not return these feelings, you know, quite as strongly in general, but all the same, Kipper wanted to rescue his friend. And so they do manage to save this halfling, Jasper Jamjar, from some redcaps who have been tracking him on the mountain. And redcaps are born from the murderous bloodshed of other creatures, fey creatures in the Feywild. I'm sure it can extend beyond that, however you want to do it. In this case, Jasper's original party, the first party into the Feywild, had murdered some boggles, which boggles are like little chaotic neutral brownies, basically. Like the fairy kind of brownies. And they cause trouble. They are all up to shenanigans and whatnot. But they're not evil. They don't really mean to hurt anyone. So the party took it like way overboard and murdered these boggles. Probably out of fear for just the Feywild in general. And while Jasper didn't want to, he ended up hurting them as well. So being the last member of that party still in the Feywild, these redcaps know how to find what created them. And they have been tracking this poor little halfling down for these past few days. The party manages to save Jasper just in time as these redcaps are coming up to his bedroll. Naturally, that's how things happen in D&D. You're either there too late or just in time. And so Kipper is just like, you know, maybe Jasper and I can go back to the portal now in my attempt to get some of the NPCs out of there. But the party, you know, rightly so, is like, oh, that's dangerous. It's a dangerous climb down. Just come with us and we can all go back together. And so they all stuck together, these three party members and these three NPCs, Kipper, Iggy Nib, and Jasper Jamjar. So they fought some Gorgons at this point and are on their way to the top of the mountain where the diametric orb is supposed to be. And this is where I realized, whoops, I forgot some important, like, foreshadowing or some kind of useful information to help them figure out what this scenario is going to be. So they get to the top of the mountain, and there's this this glowing orb on a, like, pedestal of vines that are growing around it. The mountain's top is kind of flat and cleared. There's some ridges on it, and four crystals that are pulsing, and there's these like channels of energy going from the crystals toward the orb, pulsing kind of like a heart. And the party doesn't know what to do. They don't know if they should try and take the orb. They don't know if they should mess with the crystals. They don't know if it's going to be an ambush. Rightly so, they have no idea what is going on or what to do. Whoops, silly Sarah, why? So they spend a while, a few minutes, maybe 10 minutes, I don't know, just kind of like coming up with some plans, like, all right, I'm going to fly by on the broom and try to grab the artifact, or I'm going to go look at the crystals. And I had wanted this to be kind of like this epic scenario and battle and all this stuff going on. But it was like 1 a.m. at this point, or 12 a.m. And that just wasn't going to happen. Combat takes forever in D&D. So anyway, they touch the crystals and they get this sense of like pain from a living creature. And they touch the channels of energy and get the same sense. And finally, they try and take the artifact, but it won't budge. It is just held in place magically by these vines. And they get that sense of pain again from some creature. And Valerin, being a Triton, she can communicate thoughts with amphibious creatures or something like that, creatures that can breathe water. And she senses there's that connection there. And so they try... Oh, yeah, when they touched the orb, it awoken the giant flying sea turtle thing that is part of this mountain. The mountain was called Tortal Peak, like T-O-R-T-A-L. And the second they touched that artifact, the diametric orb, and it awoken this gargantuan flying sea turtle that launches itself from the mountain. Like, it stands up, and after a round passes, after they try and smash one of the crystals, it launches itself from the mountain. I mean, it kind of is part of the mountain. And it starts flying over the Feywilds. And it turns out that Tortal Peak was like a giant sea turtle flying creature thing. Kind of like a dragon turtle, but not quite. Yeah. Yeah, so they're flying through the Feywild, having to make these, like, dexterity checks to stay on their feet. Kruos is trying to destroy the crystals, but also using this eagle whistle, where while you're blowing into it, up to like your con modifier in minutes, you can fly. So she's using that, furiously blowing into this whistle, while trying to like keep her long arms around the three NPCs, Iggy Nib, Kipper, and Jasper Jamjar. She's a strong bugbear, so she's trying to keep them from like flying off the turtle. Ra has the flying room with Valerin as a passenger, and they're like zipping around trying to destroy the crystals because they've realized after destroying one of the crystals that the creature seems less pained when they kind of touch the next crystal and make a connection with it. And they realize eventually that this diametric orb in the crystals have been like siphoning life from this creature for a long, long time, at least a century. It's what the Unseelie Fae have been using to just kind of replace the wild tree that was stolen from their land. Because it was revealed to them by Lily Merrifoot earlier that the Seelie had taken the wild tree to prevent it from being corrupted. They didn't really care about the wild tree, they didn't really want it, so they just gave it away to some elves in the material plane. As long as the Unseelie didn't have it, that's all that mattered to them. Some warring ensued over the next century, and then eventually the Unseelie Fae were given Tortal Peak, and that's where they put their orb to siphon energy with these crystals. And there was some foreshadowing, like some of that was revealed to the party when they talked to Lily Merrifoot, but they didn't know that these crystals were necessarily bad, other than that they were on the bone shards, the currency that the Unseelie used. And so it was maybe a little confusing, a little sloppily done toward the end there, where I wanted to have combat on this giant, gargantuan turtle's back as they're flying through the Feywild. But instead of combat, they just had to destroy the crystals. And once two of them were destroyed, the turtle started descending toward the Feywild. And they destroyed the next two pretty quickly, and so it just like crash lands in the Feywild, and they had to choose what to do with the orb. I use the name diametric to try and indicate that it had, like, opposing purposes, two different purposes. It could consume life and energy and store it like a battery, but it could also give life and energy, you know, kind of like those battery packs you use to charge your phone. So they gave most of the energy back to the turtle, and it gave them a ride back to the portal way ahead of schedule. And, they used the rest on the wild tree with Kaldrim. Everyone lived happily ever after. This is Future Sarah cutting in while editing the episode to say that Kruos, the bugbear with the pinecone, while they were flying back on the flying turtle, they went ahead and they planted that pinecone from the Firbolg forest. So Kruos has been carrying around this pinecone for I don't know how many years as just a memento from this forest that had been destroyed. It was very important to her, and it was her community of Firbolg people who accepted her as she was despite being a bugbear. So this pinecone gets planted on the back of the turtle, just kind of in passing as they're making their way to the portal. And I thought it was super wholesome. I just wanted to share that as I was listening back through while editing and was disappointed in myself for forgetting to mention that. So here we are. Enjoy. It was an interesting series of events. Three really fun sessions of going through the Feywild, and I'm trying to stretch my imagination, and what I couldn't describe with words, I showed them pictures. I probably said that there were giant trees and giant mushrooms like 10 different times, because that's like a big thing in my imagination of the Feywild. There's just these huge trees everywhere, dense forest, twilight. And it was fun trying to convey that and using some Fey-specific creatures. The red caps were scary. Oh, the red caps are super cool. They have these iron boots that Ra used heat metal. He's like, are they holding anything metal? And they have iron boots and they have these heavy metal sickles. And he's like, oh yeah, iron boots. And so it actually killed one of the red caps, which this is kind of gory. But I'm just imagining, like, hot boots killing a creature. And thinking about how just, like, mad the red caps are, like, how crazy they are. It was just trying to, like, hack its own foot off from the metal boot, and that killed it when the damage was done from the metal iron boot, the hot metal. It was so ridiculous. We were delirious at the end of it as this turtle is taking off of the mountain. They're on this turtle's back without even realizing it, and it's taking them through the Feywild. And I wrote this in a tweet, but Fran is like laughing so hard she's nearly crying. And like I said, she plays in Magic Awry, where they're level 18, and she's just like, we're level 6! We're only level 6! Where is this in Magic Awry? They're doing contests in Magic Awry, and in this level 6 one-shot, they're like flying over the Feywild. This is what I want to be doing more of. I want to be having more of this kind of adventure. Maybe not always, but, you know, I'll get there. I think as soon as the contests wrap up, some stuff's going to happen. Definitely. There's a lot that's just kind of looming over them. We're at the end game in Magic Awry. I'm sure it'll take months all the same, but we're nearly there. At the end of the day, I am just so pleased that I got to spend some time with really close friends, playing D&D, going on this wacky, wild adventure into the Feywild with these three incredible characters. And there's no right way to play a character. It's okay to just be basically yourself with a stat block, with a character sheet. There's nothing wrong with that. But as a DM, I was so happy to see these three characters that just came alive as their own entities and had so much personality that drove everything they did in interesting and meaningful ways, and that really raises my spirits as a DM. So yeah, that has been what's going on in my life as a DM and as a player. I'm always kind of looking for that new quest that's beckoning to me. It's almost memeable. I mean, it is memeable. I've seen memes of it where you have the DM prepping for the upcoming session, and all they can think about is the new campaign that they want to work on. That's kind of how I am. I'm looking forward to that new adventure, the new quest to go on, and And I should be prepping for my current campaign, Magic Arai. So is there a moral to the story? I don't know. I'm just kind of starting off this episode one of the Experience Quest is just kind of light and fun, letting you guys know what I've been up to, what I do, some of the struggles that I have as a DM, and some ways that I avoid burnout. So if there is a moral to this episode, it is, take a step back. If you're not having as much fun, try something new for a little bit. Don't force yourself to keep going on it. I feel obligated because we are this far. We are level 18. And I know we want to see the end of it, so I am going to keep going. But I can take a break. I can ask my party to do a one-shot now and again. I can try some different games and just take a break when I need to. Fortunately, I don't stream or record or, put these gaming sessions live. It's just our home game. It's just us. You know, no one's expecting a weekly update on what we're doing or what progress we're making. So yeah, take some time to try something new, and go on a new quest every so often. Thank you for joining me on the Experience Quest. I hope you enjoyed the journey, and that you have a lovely day. If you would like to be part of this show and share your experiences, feel free to reach out on Twitter or on my website, and we will get something going. Thank you again for taking the time to listen.